Barry always asks me, what are you talking on next week? And sometimes I have to say, I don't know. And sometimes when I get up here and I'm standing here, I don't know. But I do. Because I was at IKEA last week, and I found a poster that says what we're talking about. All you need is love and shoes. And if you turn it around, it says, shoes are like Coke, there's always room for more. We can leave off the shoes part. All you need is love. And that sounds like a good song, doesn't it? It would be a good title for Luke 10:25. On one occasion, a teacher, an expert in the law, stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? That's a good question. And in those days, they lived by the law, so they looked at it. And so what he's asking is, what do I have to do to stay in step with or in tune with God now and for eternity so that I'm always in the right standing with God? It's a very good question. And Jesus knows that this guy's an expert in the law. And what that means is he knew the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, Deuteronomy and Numbers. He knew those inside and out. And so that's what he's acting. He's an expert in the law. So Jesus, knowing this, he turns it to him. And we continue in 26. What is written in the law? He replied. How do you read it? The expert answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. You have answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this and you will live. But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Now, we have to realize, in that context, at that time, it was a different culture. In that culture, your neighbor was limited to the people of your own tribe. They were part of Israel. They were part of the 12 tribes. But your neighbor was only considered to be those people within your tribe, those people that dressed like you, that voted like you, that thought like you, that did all this stuff together. And if you were from another tribe, you had no obligation to help them out in any way at all. So it was a very narrow vision of what it meant to love your neighbor. It was only people that are, you know, like you. And so in 30, it continues on. In reply, Jesus said, a man is going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed on the other side. Now, the expert's probably thinking, okay, he's telling a story about a hero, and it's going to be about my tribe. So that's what he's going through his mind. He's waiting for the punchline. Okay? He passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place, saw him and passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came to where the man was lying, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, took him to the inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any expenses you may have. So Jesus is telling a story, and in this story, there is a hero. But the expert in the law expected it to be somebody from the tribe of Israel, and it wasn't. In fact, the hero of the story is a man that they hated. The people of Israel hated the Samaritans. And the Samaritans hated the people from the tribes of Israel. And so they didn't like each other. And in fact, even the term Samaritan is a racist term. And so some things don't change, do they? We get called all kinds of names. In that narrow-minded culture, all of a sudden, here's Jesus throwing open the door wide to everybody. And so it says, Who is your neighbor? Well, he's the person that hates you, the person you don't like, that doesn't like you. He's your rival. He's the one that wounds you. In other words, what Jesus is saying is, now things have changed. Your neighbor is everyone. Is everyone. So what Jesus is saying, this is what you're supposed to do. And that's what the law said, love your neighbor as yourself. That means you got to love yourself first too, though. But love your neighbor and yourself. But it's hard. You turn on the news and all of it's negative. Things that are going on in the world. And what it's trying to do is it's trying to take us and push us back into that narrow neighbor mindset where we close out people. Well, they're not our neighbor. They're not our neighbor. They're not our neighbor. And Jesus is there whispering and saying, just trust me. Just trust me. And when we go through life, everything falls under two categories, love and fear. So it falls into those categories. And do you know what love fear is? Fear is when things happen in your life and all of a sudden you find yourself wanting to build a wall to keep them away from me. Don't we hear that in the news? Build this wall down along the border to keep them away from us. Keep them away. I mean, you build a wall, big deal. People have ladders, you know, all kinds of stuff. But they want to build this wall. And we build walls in our lives, don't we, to keep secrets? We don't reveal everything in our lives. There's things in our lives we don't want people to know. There's things in my life I don't even want to know. And so fear comes in. But the beauty of it, it says, love casts out fear if we let it. But we've got to let it. So one of the things I want to do, I want to talk about what love is, what love isn't, and what love does. And to do that, I want to take you to the city of Corinth. Corinth was a major city, a lot like some of the major cities in our country today. And it was very hyper-sexualized, very individualistic, very materialistic, very driven. And it happened to have a Jesus movement going on. That's why Paul's writing to them. And Paul tells these people in Corinth, you are blessed by God. God has given you spiritual gifts. And he names, you know, teaching, evangelism, leadership, mercy, all these spiritual gifts. And he tells them about all these gifts you have. In chapter 13, he says, I don't care if you're an excellent teacher, if you're an excellent evangelist, if you can write praise music that just moves you. Didn't exactly say that. But he says, all of that, if it's not based on the foundation of love, you're wasting your time. It doesn't matter. So it's nothing. So what is love? Because it's important, because if we get that right, it really affects how other people see us, because they're going to see love in a brand new way that they haven't seen it before. So in 1 Corinthians 13, 4 to 8, he says, love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. It is not rude, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs, it does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. Now, if I kept reading the rest of 8, it's about the list of the spiritual gifts. He says, they're all going to pass away. They're all going to pass away, but love won't. It gets down to that. So Paul says that love is two things. It's patient and it's kind. It's patient and it's kind. Why would he limit it to two things? Because those are the positive and passive aspects of God in our lives. The kindness, it's just there. It oozes, okay? So love is patient. Love is patient. What is patient? It's the art of being able to wait. Do we ever have to wait on anything? Constantly. I know. I have three doctors that I see. I have my urologist that treats me for the cancer. I have my general practitioner. And then I have the radiologist, oncologist for the radiation part of the cancer treatment that I went through. And so I have those people. And they're very different. When I go to my urologist, I can count on sitting in the waiting room at least 45 minutes. If I go to my other doctor, it's only 25 minutes. If I go see the radiology guy, it's maybe 3. Because they're very precise. They have it. When I go to my dentist, I sometimes don't even have to wait. I walk in and sit down and they go, come on. Okay. They're very quick. Some of the doctors, I have to learn how to be patient and wait. But we're not good at that. We're not good at that. We get irritated. Do you ever get irritated with something? We jump the gun and we want to give our opinion and we tell people what they should do. And God's just saying, chill. I know how to wait. Learn. So how patient are you? You don't have to say it. Just think about it. How patient are you? Okay? Love is kind. Kindness is an abundance of that meets a need. It's having an abundance in our life that meets a need. And that abundance can be kindness. So when you see somebody that's down and out and they're having a hard time and they don't know what's going, you can go to them and just with your words lift them up. How many times have we had that happen to us? Just with our words. And in fact, there are some people that I know, just being around them lifts you up because they have that positive attitude. So Paul says, just be patient and kind. That's a response. And that's the gospel. Really, it's the gospel. And we need to know that God is never going to force us. That's one of the important things that I learned when I came out and I left my home church that I grew up in that didn't want me anymore. I learned that God's patient. And God's not going to interfere, not going to butt into my life and force anything into my life. When I get to that point, when I got to that point where I turned again to God, God was there. And God came to me, lifted me up, strengthened me, and put me on my feet again. And it was like, oh, thank you, Lord. But God was very patient with me when I was in my rebellious phase. And that's what love is. So Paul then says, let me tell you what love isn't. Love is not envious. Now, envious is a different word from coveting and jealousy. Okay, in fact, Proverbs 14:30 says, the heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. If we envy, it rots the bones. It's one of those things that when we can't be happy for other people. We can't be happy for other people. When if we don't have that envy, I can look at how blessed you are and say, good for them. Good for them. Love isn't boastful. It does not think that the world's parade is about us. It doesn't think that the world's parade is about us. Okay? Because a lot of times, we know people like that, don't we? They want to talk, they put themselves in leadership positions, and they try to glorify themselves and do all kinds of things. They're boastful. They're puffed up. There's some Halloween costumes that kids put them on and they push a button and they become bigger than they are. It's positioned that. Love isn't prideful. Prideful is when you begin to exaggerate. That's that puffed up thing. And you think that I'm too good for my skin. And you have to exchange things. And you have to make things up to make yourself better than you are. That's easier to do than we think. Because it's really easy to do that. Or our self-esteem is so low that we want to do it so that we feel better about ourselves. And love is not dishonorable or disrespectful. Love respects the image of God in every child, in every person. Every one of us have the image of God within us. And we need to respect that image. Because if we're bad-mouthing somebody and we're putting people down, it has a disastrous effect on people. It's something you don't want to do. It causes a lot of problems. Love is not self-seeking. Self-seeking people are putting themselves first. And our job is to make sure that the story is about God and not about us. People are self-seeking. They want the story to be about them. And those type of people, they'll talk to you because they want to get to your boss. They'll talk to you because they want to line them up with your friend. Or they have some other agenda that they do. And they actually use you to get what they want through somebody else. Love isn't self-seeking. It doesn't force its agenda. A person who's self-seeking, it's all about their agenda, what they've got to do, what they've got to have happen. Okay? And love is not easily angered. This is a really interesting thing because especially when we're talking about anger, in that culture, when you're talking about anger, you're talking about a knife or knives, which is really interesting if you're talking about anger. So you're talking about knives and knife sharpeners. And what happens with anger is you get angry and you get the knife and then you get the sharpener and you put it on and you start sharpening the knife of anger and sharpening the knife of anger and getting it to a very sharp attack point where it's ready. That's what it talks about when it talks about anger. And we ever get anger? I mean, sometimes it's one of those things where the anger gets in there and starts building and churning and stuff like that, and it builds up and it builds up, and it gets to the point where you've just got to say something. And so you send that email or that tweet in the middle of the night. None of us would ever do that now. And we don't know anybody that would, right? But you get angry, you got to send that tweet, you got to send that, you know. And it's very sharp, it's very pointed, and it's very hurtful. They're easily angered. It hurts, and so you get angry. Love doesn't keep score. KK's going, yeah, right, uh-huh. That's it. Love doesn't, but we do. I forgot my change, but what love does is it comes and it says, well, actually, it gets out a little book and it opens it up and it gets out this little pen and it goes, oh, you did that. That's a good one. Oh, you did that. That was a bad one. Oh, you did that. That's -3. You're in the hole so far. And you keep score. And if the score at the end of the day is good enough, then I'm going to give back to you. Right? And a lot of people, that's how they govern their relationships. And you ask them, you say, how do you know when your relationship's going right? Well, they do this, 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 and this. What if it's going wrong? Well, they do this, this, and this. Sometimes they're the same thing, but they're going this way, and whichever one it tallies up the most, that's what they get done. But love doesn't keep score. Like Kay said, I do, but love doesn't. And keeping score never works. It doesn't, because we get wrong perceptions of what the score was or what the game point was. We'll be found out. And lastly, love does not delight in evil. Love does not delight in evil. What's evil? Evil's when you take something beautiful and you twist it into something ugly. Have you ever heard of wicker furniture? Wicker means to bend, to twist. And you take something like sex or money or power or name all these things that are good things and you twist them into something ugly and you use them for something ugly, then that becomes evil. So that's what love doesn't do. That's what love isn't. Okay, so what does love do? Love rejoices in the truth. Love rejoices in the truth. When you see somebody that finds the truth, we rejoice with them because they have found the truth. And we need to celebrate more often. I read this and I went, okay, we need to celebrate more often. It's Labor Day, we'll have hot dogs. And then they got a text from Ogden and they're having hot dogs. It's like, that settles it, we're having hot dogs. So afterwards we have ice cream and cake and hot dogs and chips and salad, potato salad and birthday cake, did I say that? And we have zucchini bread. Kay spent two nights baking zucchini bread. So, and it's really good. My favorite, well, I'm not telling you because you'll eat my favorite then. My favorite is the one with the nuts and chocolate chips on it. Love protects. In the original language, it means roof or shelter. And what that means is when you see somebody that's in hurting, you go and you bring them under your shelter. You invite them in. And it's really interesting because these last 2 weeks, we have seen all of this. We've seen the hate. We've seen the ugly in the white supremacist groups and the KKK causing problems and stirring up people wanting to divide instead of bringing together. We've seen that. And then the hurricane hit, Hurricane Harvey hit. And one of the images that hit me was, it was a picture of a camera looking down a long road, and the road is just bumper to bumper with trucks and cars pulling boats headed for Houston, and motorhomes and trailers, and pictures of in the streets of Houston, people in their boat going around trying to help people, and people even have blow-up mattresses going around getting people and putting them on their air mattresses and taking them. I even saw some pictures with people with pool toys blown up, putting people on them to take them to dry land. Houston is a city of multicultural city. And all of that was set aside. They just helped out. And it just was amazing. It was like, wow. One of the shots afterwards, the water had gone down and they were tearing the walls apart and throwing, you know, tiling this stuff out on the street. And the one guy was talking about how, no, he says, is it terrible? He says, well, it's not fun. He says, but you know, I've got my friends and I've got my neighbors and I got people from the church helping me. That's what love does. It protects. And hospitality means to invite the stranger in. And that's what it does. It brings it in. And so that's what love is. Love trusts. Love trusts. My dad always said, if somebody doesn't trust, they can't be trusted. Love trusts. And you know, I want to be that kind of person. I try to be that kind of person that trusts in other and believes in other people. And when I'm in a relationship, a friendship, whatever, I want to be all in on it. And love doesn't hedge its bets. And what I mean by that is if you're hedging a bet, okay, I'm betting that something with K is going to take place. And what I'm doing is I'm taking a little bit and I'm just giving just a little bit. Like, here, let me put this much into this relationship. And if that goes well, I may put a little bit more. If you really love me, it's like, you know. And it's called hedging a bet. And love doesn't do that. It doesn't hedge the bet. It's all in. And if I'm going to help Kay, I'm going to help Kay. If I say I'm going to be there and do it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be there and do it. And so I don't hedge on what's going on. It believes the best in people. And love always hopes. And hope is a picture of what can be. It's a story that's going on in there. And every time we have an opportunity to build up people's hope, every time we meet somebody, we can build up their hope. We can build up their life. How do we do that? By getting to know them, showing an interest in something that they're interested in. If we go to Sam's Club, I can say hi to several people and we can chat. about things because I've shown an interest in what they're doing. The guy who's at the door when you leave, I can tell you about his girlfriend and the sicknesses and the problems she's going through because I've shown an interest. He's a gun collector. I had two guns that I didn't want. I let him collect them for me. So we have something in common. I'll go out, he'll tell me a joke. I'll tell him one. One of the ladies that works out there, she has a medical condition we've talked about, so we see each other and talk all the time. Show interest in somebody. If you don't have anything in common, you can't talk. I heard a story of one pastor. He says, if you drove from my neighborhood and you come to my yard, you would look at it and think, whoa, they really need some help. And the house right next to him was immaculate. And there are people that do that with their yards. They're immaculate. When I was selling real estate back in 77, we went to see a house. And I swear, the lawn was flat. Every blade was exactly the same height. It was almost dumb because it looked fake. But it was so perfect. And if a leaf fell, they probably caught it before it hit the ground. You know, it's like. And no, he said that was his neighbor. But they never talked because he'd catch the leaf and run back in the house. And so he said, you know, he was praying. He said, what can I do? And the Lord says, get interested in gardening. Now, gardening is something you have to like. If you don't, like Scott loves gardening, not. And so when we first moved into the house, he used to mow the lawn. But he hates it so bad that he'll put it off long enough that I do it. And I don't mind. But anyway, God said, gardening. He says, so I did. He says, I hired one. And he says, little family came in and they did a great job on the yard. Now they have something to talk about. It gives hope and it lifts up. And you do that by showing interest. And love perseveres. It hangs in there. Bill Hybels tells about a time when a neighbor moved in. And they got a conversation going. It took 5 years before the neighbor showed up at church. But he did. And it took another 3 years before he came back. And now he's actively involved. So it perseveres. And when you meet somebody, call them by name. If you go out to lunch and your server comes around and they have a name tag on, call them by name. When I walk in Sam's, I go, hi, Jean, hi, Pearl, hi, Steve. And they know who I am. And we chat. When you go to the restaurant, when Brandy was here, we'd go to the Sizzler down here before they closed it. The waitresses knew her by name, by sight. And it was like, whoa, okay. So be persevere. And it says, love never fails. Love never fails. So we've seen what love does, what it is, and what it does. And there's one more thing we can do to get very practical. In Philippians 2:3, it says, value others above yourself, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. I kind of talked about that already. But show interest in the other person, not just a person behind the counter that you're doing a transaction with. Here, I needed to check. You know, when you've turned something, if you're taking something back, ask them how they're doing. Ask them how their day's going. When I'm in the checkout line, I've learned, and it took me time, when I'm in the checkout line, when I get up there, I say, hi, hey, who's Jesus, how's this going? Now, how do I know he's Jesus? He's got a name tag on. If it's a name that I can't pronounce because it's from a different country, I look at it and I think about it and I think, okay, how would I pronounce this? And I try to think about it and I go, okay. I say, now, is it? And I try and they'll say, close. Then they'll tell me how to pronounce it. And what do I tell them next? I may have to ask you 2 or 3 times because I forget. Huh, Alan? I had to ask Alan twice already. And Alan's an easy name. Show an interest in them and who they are. And in every person you meet. And if we ask a little prayer, God, show me something. If there's something I need to know, show me. There's a great book I have in the back, and it calls Walk Across the Room. And it's about evangelism and how it's just walking across the room. I told you about the time when I was in San Francisco, a long time ago, more than 15 years ago. I was at the CMCC in Castro, and the service was over, and we went upstairs for the refreshments, and I walked up, and I got my cookie and my punch, and I went over by the wall, and I thought, I wonder if anybody's going to talk to me. And I'm standing there, and nobody, not a word. And there were people all over the place. And I noticed over here, there was another guy by himself. Didn't look too happy. Nobody talking to him. And I ate my cookie and I drank my punch. And I started out the door and I thought, somebody really needs to go talk to that guy. And I got 3 feet down the hall and the Spirit said, what's wrong with you? Lord, I don't go to this church. So? Don't you hate that? So? Okay. So I went back, run over, introduced myself. We chatted for a bit. Something was going on in his life, and I, you know, asked him if there's anything I could do to help. And we chatted, and he said, no, that was fine. Thanks for coming over and talking to him. And he said, I'm okay. So I'm going to go talk to my friends now. It's okay. So I left, and he went over and joined the other group. But listen to the Spirit. Go talk to him. Somebody needs to talk to him. You go do it. Okay, I'll go do it. But we do it. And we can be people that influence people's lives. Have you ever had anybody that just made a difference in your life? Mine happened when I was 19 years old. I was working for Woolworths as a stock boy. I joined the Army Reserves, and I'd gone to active duty, and I was at Fort Polk, Louisiana, having a great time. I came home from my active duty, and I went down to the Woolworths to see how things were. And I walked in, I saw my old boss, and he said, you ready to go back to work? And I said, yeah. He goes, are you through with your training? And I said, yeah. And he says, well, okay, go upstairs and tell Mr. Noble that if he's going to put June's kid to work, put you to work too. Okay. So I went up the stairs, and I walked into the stock room, and I'm here, Mr. Noble is there, and over there, there's a young guy standing there putting price tags on his shirt. And he looked up, and we became friends. Not a word was said. We became friends. And for me, that was a big deal. Because I'm shy, innocent, and reserved. And people always laugh when they hear that. You know, I say, yeah, I'm shy like a gorilla. But a gorilla is kind of shy. But I walked in there, and it made a difference. His name was Bill. We had everything in common. One of my things I wanted to buy was an aquarium. He had one. So the second time we were together, we went to his house and we looked at his aquarium for a long time. He had a motorcycle. I wanted one. My aunt had one she didn't want. I've got a motorcycle. I had bought skis because I wanted to ski. I'd put them on and tried them on the front lawn and scratched them all up. He had skis. He taught me to ski. When he looked at my skis, he thought I had been skiing. No, this was dry ground. Okay, but he taught me to ski. He taught me to water ski. We had a great time. His dad used to take us out and we'd try and stand on each other's shoulders and all this stuff. Meshed. My friends took us to the clothing store one day and they took him aside. They took me through this place and said, which of these would you buy? And I went, oh, this one, this one, this one, and maybe that one. Moved me off to the side, brought Bill over. Which ones would you buy? Oh, this one, this one, this one, maybe that one. We used to go to Metro Dance Club. I went up to pick him up one time, and he came walking down the stairs, and he had exactly the same clothes on that I did. He had to go change. He went on a mission, came home. I went on a mission. I came home. We went out to see some friends one time, and we're driving home, and he got married while I was gone. And so we're driving along, and he's driving Betty and then me. And he says to Betty, his wife, you know, it's a good thing Dee went on a mission, because if he hadn't, we'd probably never got married. We were having too much fun. That's not something you tell your wife. You want to make brownie points? That's not it. It caused problems. She was jealous. And for years, I mean, even after I moved to Provo and all this stuff, whenever we were like this. We meshed. And you can do that with people around you. And if you show that positive love, guess what? It's going to be contagious. It's going to make a difference. Just calling your server at the restaurant by name and interacting with them. Ask them how their day's going. It makes a big difference. So you'll probably never see them again, but that doesn't matter. You have the here and now. And if you're motivated by love, you're going to do the best thing for them. And you're not going to do something that's going to hurt them and push them away. And that's what we're called to do, isn't it? We're called to make sure that this story is about God and not us. If I find myself making the story about me, I need to fix something, because it's about God and God's love, God's compassion. I mean, I'm in the story, but I'm not the story. And we can't do that, because when we do that, we'll actually push people away. We'll actually push people away. That's what love is. That's what God isn't. And that's what God does. It lifts up, it strengthens, all these positive things that it does. And that's why all we need is love. And shoes. Shirt and shoes required. The other thing is, I saw a sign that a church had, and along this line, it's a little 1 foot by 2 foot sign. And it's one of those, you've seen those things you put in your front lawn with the two little wires. And it's one of those, and it says, "Love everyone always." And I thought that was so cool. I got a picture of it, and I took it to my friend Ron, who made the stained glass windows. And he is going to make us some of those. He would have had this done now, but some things came up. And so he couldn't do it. And he went on a vacation. He hadn't been on a vacation in 10 years. And I said, go on vacation with his family. So he needed to get out. But he's making us some of those. And I'll be bringing those in as soon as they get done. And I'm going to go over and help him make them. But when we get them, you can put them in your yard. If you don't have a yard, you can put them in your window. And in fact, the pastor was talking, the guy with the gardening, he saw one in his yard, and he says, can you get me one of those? You're going to put a in your yard? Okay. But when we get them, I'll bring them to church, and we can pick them. We can put them in our yard. We can put them all over the place. People who have them report that they get stolen. People steal them and put them in their yard, which is cool. But we'll have those probably in a couple of weeks. And I may recruit some of you to help make them. Ron will figure something out like this, and he'll usually get it done, and then he won't charge me, and he won't take anything for it. Because he's already hinting that way, because the stuff he makes them out of, he used to make signs before the windows, and he says, well, I've got some of this stuff still to make the signs with, and I'd really like to get rid of it. Okay. He's setting me up for a freebie. But I love him. We've known each other for quite a few years and love him to death. So, and our windows, he made all of those for like $200 and $250 a window. Other places, like the little grape one, not that complicated, was $800. We paid $250. He's a blessing. And we need to be that. We need to be the blessing in everybody's life. And so we need to love everyone always. Would you pray with me? Loving God, we thank you. We thank you that you are a loving God. Lord, we live in a world that there's so much hatred, so much division. And Lord, help us to be uniting, a uniting force for good, to set aside differences, to set aside all that stuff. Lord, to pray for our leaders. It's too easy just to complain about them. Lord, help us to pray for them. To guide them, to direct them, lead them down that road. Lord, Hurricane Harvey was not good, caused a lot of problems, and people died, Lord. But I'm thankful for the help that was there so that less people died. Because considering, Lord, how much it was, how big it was, it could have been a whole lot worse. But Lord, I'm thankful that your spirit worked in people and brought them together to help each other in a spirit of unity. And Lord, in this time of cleanup, they're going to need your help to stay focused, to stay online, to be filled with compassion. And Lord, there are many places out there right now that are collecting, taking offerings and love offerings to help rebuild. Lord, those that can, I pray you would stimulate them to give what they can, if they can and when they can. So Lord, thanks. Thanks for your presence in our lives. Thanks for helping us to be your children. And we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.